Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Joyful, joyful.
You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9 with the
Priest,
the Pom,
and the Poof.
This is the show where we talk about spirituality and sexuality for our community.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit Lounge, and you're with the Poof and the Priest tonight.
We don't have any Pom.
No, but love to Pom and to Anne, thinking of you guys. And she'll be back with us next week.
She will be. She'll be
fine. If we let her.
Yeah, if we let her in the studio.
We might decide that we're better off without her.
Who do we... We've let somebody into the studio today. Who do we have coming up?
We're going to talk about storytelling today. So what I want you to do is I want you to lie on the couch. No, don't go to sleep. Fill up your wine glass. Just relax, chill out, and get ready for a fabulous fun night of talking about storytelling, but we're going to hear some stories. And we've also got some show and tell that we're going to talk about too. So I think that will be a fun program.
It does sound very fascinating. To kick it all off, we've got our first track, which is called Down to the River to Pray.
Joy 94.9.
And you're on Spirit Lounge, and that was a beautiful track, Down to the River to Pray by Alison Krauss. And tonight's guest is a storyteller, arts educator, and director of Telling Words. She has a professional background in performance, teaching, and creative writing. And she also collaborates with musicians to perform at festivals and conferences, and was a 2011 winner of the Pat Glover Memorial Storytelling Award at the Port Fairy Folk Festival. With us tonight in the Spirit Lounge to talk about storytelling and to tell us some stories is Julie Perrin. Welcome to Spirit Lounge, Julie.
Thank you, Joy.
Julie, when and how did you get interested in storytelling?
Well, it was a long time ago now, over 20 years ago. I was studying and teaching drama at the time. And I saw a storyteller in action and I just was completely swept away by it. I fell in love with it then and there because it... In one form, it seemed to do all of the things I loved at once. I had been a teacher of English in English literature and poetry, and first of all in secondary schools, and then I was a primary drama teacher. And I was then went on to teach improvisation to adults. And storytelling seemed to me to do all of those things at once. You know, it was an improvised form, but it did work with... a body of literature. Not all of it, of course, is written, but it works with beautiful words. And so I was just thrilled when I saw this person telling stories to a group of children, and it was so spontaneous and powerful. So basically it started from there.
So what actually is storytelling?
Well, what I practice, I've had to start to call it oral storytelling, which sounds a bit dental. but I guess we need to make that distinction because storytelling can mean so many different things now. And, of course, every movie that you see is telling a story. And most of our stories are told by screens now. And this is really going back into the earlier place where it all begins, with spoken story. And humans have been telling stories, you know, ever since we were sitting around fires in caves. So it's a very ancient thing to kind of form a connection to. And often I find myself reminding people, you know, that we are actually storytelling beings.
Well, certainly things like the Bible was originally handed down through storytelling.
Yes, yeah, and I think we don't really... we're not curious enough about that, about what oral cultures were and are. And, you know, one of the things I love to talk about is the investigation of oral culture and actually understanding what it was, because now that we have writing, we almost cannot conceive of what the world was like before you could store memory outside of the mind. And there was this great man called Walter Ong. I was just talking to someone about him today, who in the 1980s wrote this book called Orality and Literacy, which talked about this huge unfathomable difference between oral cultures and, you know, cultures with writing. And the way they stumbled on it was that the classical scholars were looking for the original version of Homer, and they could just never figure out which was the first version until they finally realised, my God, it was orally composed. There was no written original version. And this was just so far beyond what we could conceive of, and so far from how we understand memory now, because we use our memories, you know, in such reduced ways that we couldn't believe that, you know, people could actually store that much memory in their minds.
But wouldn't there still be cultures that, for them, the oral tradition is still the way that they pass down stories and share stories?
Yes, there are. It's not a pure oral form now because, you know, writing sort of pretty much disseminated throughout the world, but there are cultures that hold a lot more value in it and practice it a lot more, and where it's honoured a lot more as well, I guess, and celebrated and enjoyed. And I think the advent of screens has really shifted our awareness of what we can do human to human, face to face, and we've kind of shunted it sideways a little bit and forgotten how beautiful and powerful and both exciting and tender it can be.
And we were talking before we came on air about the fact that in losing our storytelling, we've also lost the ability to actually listen to one another in many ways.
Yeah. Often what I find I'm doing is... actually, there's a beautiful saying. You can see my little show and tell here. I've got this. Do you want to describe what you can see?
I think it's a wooden thing.
It's a wooden thing. Oh, great.
And it sort of looked like an... What is it?
Well, it's a zebra.
It's a very long-necked zebra.
With a long-necked zebra.
That's what confused me.
Yeah, it's a long-necked zebra. It's to remind me of this beautiful saying about storytelling, a Jewish saying that says that the task of the storyteller is to create a place where wisdom, who is like a shy animal, can come out and graze. And often I feel that in inviting people to gather and listen and to actually listen with their bodies and kind of gather in a way where the energy, the listening energy actually travels body to body. And so if we kind of, you know, aren't too far spaced, too far apart, and if we're not all kind of sitting in a circle looking at each other, but if we're kind of bunched up and gathered around, we can listen unselfconsciously. And there's something very resonant about how the energy will travel. You know, laughter travels differently when people are bunched together, as does a sigh of relief or sadness. And so we, you know, it's about listening with our bodies as much as anything and getting to that place where we're not distracted, you know, where we put the phones down for long enough.
Oh, heaven help us. I mean, goodness me.
Could we do that?
Anarchy.
It's a tall order.
I was talking to someone today who, they said they'd never turn their phone off.
Oh.
But that's what, you know, society's like, isn't it? We have... People like Andrew, who are always on social media, they're always playing games, they're always on their computer.
I wouldn't say that I spend my time playing games, but I would be one of those people that doesn't ever turn off their phone.
Yeah. Oh.
And I'm probably also one of those people who can't remember things. I can remember, like, where I've put them, but I can't remember what the content of that document is until I actually physically go and open it. So a lot of this memory stuff is really resonating with me.
There's some beautiful, I think we've given memory a bad deal and a bad press. And so, you know, we've in education we've kind of banished rote learning, and we're, you know, that's really not the go. But I think we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater a bit, and we've lost some of the beauty that memory can bring us. And there's a beautiful quote from a man who wrote quite an academic book called Real Presences. But one of the lovely, lovely things he says in it is that when we recall something and learn it by heart, that it forms in us a shaping reciprocity. So it actually shapes itself in us and shapes who we are a little bit as we learn by heart. And the other thing that he says is so memorable is that when we have that shape in us, the detergent tide of social conformity cannot tear it from us.
Oh, that's fabulous.
What a great term.
And you're on Spirit Lounge and we're talking with Julie Perrin. We'll be back soon.
Joy 94.9.
That was the sumptuous sounds of Chris Smither, No
sumptuous.
Love Today. You're in the Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. We are joined today by Julie Perrin, who is a storyteller. Julie, can you tell us, is storytelling something that you just kind of innately know, or is it a learnt skill?
Look, I think it's both. I think there is something... In a way, it's almost like born in us, and it's, I think, something humans do, which is to seek to make meaning out of experience. And so, you know, we all tell stories every day. And I guess what I'm interested in is just kind of not so much teaching people. Often think when I say what I do, that, you know, I'm going to be teaching people to public speaking skills. It's not quite that. It's... part of it is actually helping people to locate and know what their stories are, their own stories of their own life, and how they might want to tell them. And often, once people start to explore that, there'll be beautiful kind of metaphors and things sitting inside, just in stuff they tell you that, you know, suddenly they realise is quite resonant, and it actually has a whole lot of reverberations and holds a lot of meaning for them. So... yeah, the answer's both. We all do it, and there are ways to actually kind of craft it and work with it a bit more.
So what's really involved in becoming a storyteller?
It's kind of an apprenticeship process, really, I think. You know, there are performance skills in it. Obviously, there's, you know, vocal work and all the kind of skills of being in front of an audience. And there's kind of, well, there's the whole... area of work of selecting the material and starting to get to know, you know, both the traditional folklore and matching the sorts of stories you're telling to who your audience are and what the occasion is. And so a lot of the what makes it work is if you really are quite thoughtful about who your audience are, what the event is, and you make a good match, you know, that speaks to those people so they don't just feel like you're spouting off some script that, you know, has no relevance to them, but you're actually speaking to them.
Mm-hmm. And how does sacred storytelling differ from other storytelling?
Profane storytelling. Well, look, in a lot of ways, I don't always make the distinction, because I think when people really listen together, often it is quite a sacred moment. And whether it's, you know, holy hilarity or, you know, real tenderness where people are sitting together hearing something that, you know, is a description of someone entering some kind of abyss where everybody in the room knows, you know, that they've got, that the story is talking about going to a dark place. It can be all these different inflections. But there are, you know, obviously there are sort of sets of sacred stories that belong to different religious traditions that are regarded, obviously, by those traditions as sacred. And there's the, I suppose, the experience of feeling that something's holy ground.
But there's, like, if you take the creation story, we have the sacred creation story that we find in the Bible, but also coming from New Zealand, the Maoris have some wonderful creation stories. The Aboriginal, each tribe has an amazing creation story, and to me, probably all of those are really sacred, aren't they?
Yes, you wouldn't want to be putting your hand up to say, we've got a corner on what's sacred and nobody else's is.
And ours is right and you're all wrong.
Oh, absolutely not. And I think that's one of the fabulous things about story, is that when people are gathered and entering a story together, it is really a way of understanding the other and understanding other cultures, understanding other experiences that aren't your own. It's how you actually walk in someone else's shoes. And I think that's at the heart of what's, you know, sacred about it.
Yeah. I mean, we're part of a community that in many ways has rejected religion because the way religion has treated many of us. But I wonder, is storytelling a way that we can actually receive healing and be reconnected into that sacred part of us that many people have rejected?
Well, I think one of the really wonderful things about when people really listen and when there's a way of people gathering where we're sort of undefended, you know, we're not there to kind of make our own point, we're not there for a verbal joust, we're not there to win a debate. I think it's in those moments of listening to stories that the biggest shifts happen in actually really deep understanding of another's experience. And certainly my experience of gay issues connected to the church, it's been in the moments where people have heard, really heard, the experiences of their, you know, their families, their friends, who tell what it's like in a way that's not about proving a debate, but listening to a story. That I think often that's where the shifts really happen of understanding, beginning to do some of the healing for the damage that's been done.
Yeah. Now, you're going to share with us a story?
Well, I am going to start with a traditional story for you today. This is just a short story, a Jewish story. It comes from a terrific collection by a woman called Clarissa Piccola Estes, who's a psychotherapist as well as a cantadora, storyteller, and she put together this quite a number of really good collections. And this one is called The Four Rabbinim, which I understand is the plural for rabbis. So the four rabbis or the four rabbinim, and this is how it goes. Once there were four rabbinim who were awakened by an angel and taken up to the seventh vault of the seventh heaven, and there they beheld the sacred wheel of Ezekiel. On the way back down from earth, down to earth from paradise, the first rabbi, having seen such splendour, completely lost his mind. And he went frothing and foaming for the rest of his days. The second rabbi grew extremely cynical and said, "I only dreamed the wheel of Ezekiel, nothing really happened." And the third rabbi became obsessed, and he lectured and would not stop about how it was all constructed and what it all meant. And in this way, he too went astray and betrayed his faith. The fourth rabbi took paper and reed in hand. He sat by his window and he penned song after song for his daughter in her cradle, for the morning dove, and for all the stars in the night sky. And in this way, he lived better than before.
And we're with Julie Perrin, and we're going to be back with another story shortly.
To find out more about Joy 94.9, check out joy.org.au.
You're on the Spirit Lounge in Joy 94.9. That was a band called Leluk with One Day Soon. We're joined this evening by Julie Perrin, live in the studio. She's a storyteller, and we were kind of hoping that you might be able to share a story with us, Julie.
Oh, let me do it again. This one is a story that happened quite a few summers ago now, down on the Great Ocean Road, down at Anglesey Way. And it didn't start off very well, actually. The story really begins with me having this inexplicable, out-of-nowhere, dark night of the soul. Rather unfortunately, in a rented beach house full of teenagers.
Oh, oh no.
So we were staying down at Anglesey, and were in this tiny little beach house that we'd rented over the Christmas New Year week, and my young people were there with, I think, most of their friends sort of sleeping all over the lounge room floor. And for some reason, right like a bolt out of nowhere, I just had this really quite extreme experience of grief that just sort of struck like a bolt, and I had no idea really what it was about, but I was just sobbing for a lot of the night. And in the end, it was like there was nowhere to go because the house was full of water. I ended up in the car, sleeping in the car outside. And in the wee hours, my beloved came out, and as the light came, he said, you know, would you like to go for a drive? Let's go for a drive on the Great Ocean Road. So this is what we did. And we ended up driving, you know, it was very beautiful, of course. And as the morning grew, you know, to a civilised hour when other people were awake, we were coming back from our drive, and we stopped in at Aries Inlet, where there's this gallery called Eagle's Nest, and it was an art gallery. And he said, look, let's, you know, let's go and have a look in here. And turns out that this art gallery at Aries Inlet was having an exhibition of lighthouses. And as you know, there's a very classic, beautiful lighthouse down there. And they had, there's quite a community of artists live down that way who'd all, you know, made these fabulous contributions, as well as, you know, quite a lot of, you know, from beyond Victoria and beyond. And there was every possible version of a lighthouse in this little gallery space. You know, they were in glass, they were in embroidery, they were carved out of wood, they had architectural drawings, they had black and white photos, you know, the whole gamut, every possible version. And, you know, some of them were sort of lighthouses joyously bending over with fish leaping up towards them, and others were sort of standing up, you know, like very well-behaved lifesavers with little red caps on. And I had a kind of suspicion about lighthouses in some way from my youth, where I'd grown up at one period of my childhood that my family had gone to a church that was very conservative, and you know, there were very sort of definite views about salvation, and you know, there used to be kind of the lighthouse was basically where you looked to, you know, for direction, and God would send the guiding light and so on. And so I was a little not too sure that I trusted the image of a lighthouse to speak to me. But I found this picture, exhibit number one, sitting just in a tiny little corner of its own. It was a very small picture in a frame, and a painting by a local artist called Yuri Tibor Novak. And Yuri Tibor Novak had depicted the lighthouse aloft. So it was sitting in midair over the sea, up in the air, on a rock boulder. So it was this sort of solid little lighthouse, but it was kind of whimsical as well because it was floating. And it just captured my imagination somehow, that this lighthouse aloft made me smile and started to inhabit my imagination. Anyway, the rest of the day wore on, and, you know, gradually I sort of felt kind of slightly, you know, a bit recovering from the night before. And as it turned out, on this particular day, we'd booked to go to Torquay Hotel because Paul Kelly was on. So that evening we headed down to Torquay Hotel and joined several hundred other enthusiastic people in the crowd. And it was actually a really beautiful thing to be in the crowd because people were just so up for it, you know. And it's not often that you're in a crowd like that where people of all ages are sitting there and everyone knows all the words. And, you know, I watched this really young couple sitting on the grass, just watching with absolute stillness, and it was just beautiful to watch them watch Paul, you know. And he was performing with a fantastic group of musicians, and he's, of course, a consummate performer. And it was just a really good thing to do, you know. It just felt like the best way to finish the day. But at the very end of the concert, they all downed their instruments and they came right down to the front of the stage, and they all gathered around this one microphone and started to sing a cappella. And the song they sung was Paul Kelly's take on the 23rd Psalm, "Oh, the Lord is my shepherd." And, of course, he's recast the words, you know, with a new cosmology. But the refrain is, I will meet you in the middle of the air. And suddenly, you know, there was my day, there was my lighthouse aloft, and I felt really met by this moment and by this song.
Great shows, fun people, Joy 94.9.
And we're talking to Julie Perrin here on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9. Julie, what is Telling Words?
Telling Words is the name of my business. There are three main things that I do. Obviously, I perform stories. I also run workshops, as I've alluded to, for people both in telling lived experience and also for people who want to learn to remember to tell traditional stories, because most of us don't trust our memories very much these days. And so I run workshops that help people get to know their memories again and to trust them.
So you've got some events coming up.
I have. I've actually got a short series of four Monday nights coming up in October 19, I think we start. October 15. Thank you, Joy. You've got it in front of you. Four Monday nights beginning October 15 called Limber Up Your Story Memory. And they're for people who would just like an introduction to how could I actually trust myself to remember to tell a story. And there's something good about working with short traditional tales, which is what we do, because it helps you get a handle on the shape of story. And it's kind of like, I think it helps people be confident, even though they're learning traditional stories, it helps them grow in confidence about telling their own as well.
And there's also an exhibition?
Yeah, actually, this is rather lovely. I wrote an Australian blessing a long time ago now that has been quite loved and well known, especially through the Uniting Church. And a Warrnambool artist called Rachel Peters has actually been working on a series of paintings based on this blessing called Deep Stillness, and that is going to be launched on Friday, October the 5th at the Centre for Theology and Ministry in Parkville.
So if people are interested, your website is tellingwords.com.au.
Indeed it is. They can just Google my name or Google Telling Words, and there's a blog on there as well with up-to-date news and photos. And
in your spare time you write, and there's some links to some articles. I was reading one today. It was fabulous.
Oh, good. Actually, I'm hoping I'll be in the Age of Faith column again this Sunday too. So that's something I'm in sometimes. Yeah.
So go to tellingwords.com.au. Now, we're going to have another story.
Oh, good. This is actually one of my favourite stories. I love telling this, and it is a story that happened to me, and it's just been published this year in by Melbourne Books in a collection called Award-Winning Bush Verse and Stories. This story is called The Lost Dog's Home, and it happened at a very particular time. It happened in March 2009, and the date's significant. Because it's about a month or 6 weeks after the Black Saturday bushfires. This story takes place at my house in inner Melbourne. And basically it was an ordinary day. I was having a meeting from my home office. And I don't know if you've ever had a home office, but it is the site of magnificent convenience and enormous compromise. And, you know, probably looked to anyone else as if I was just having a cup of tea with a friend. But in fact, we had an event to organise. We had a whole set of decisions that had to be made. And I also had to get out of the house because I had a dental appointment in the CBD to get to. So, you know, we were on song. We were churning through these decisions. And all of a sudden, there's a knock on the door. Now, under ordinary circumstances, I would have ignored it and just kept going with the meeting. But my little dog, who's a dashy cross, very placid little character, normally no fuss at all, this Oscar came belting through the house and started barking furiously at the front door. It was impossible to pretend there was no one there. So I went and opened the door, and there was a man standing there who I'd never seen before. And he was holding on to the collar of a very beautiful golden retriever. And he looked at my little dog, who's, you know, barking. He says, "Oh, is that your dog?" And I said, "It's my dog." He said, "Oh, I was really hoping this would be your dog. It's been running around on the road outside and I'm scared, it's going to be harmed." And I said, "Look, I'm sorry. I, I know a lot of the dogs around here and I know the neighbours and I've never seen that dog before. Oh, he said, I was really hoping that you would know it or you would know who owned it. But listen, he said, I have to go to work. Would you mind this dog? So there I am with the dog and I got one of my dog's old leads. And we live quite near a big area of parkland where there are a lot of people walk their dogs. And I thought if I tie this dog up in the shade at my gate with some water, perhaps whoever had lost it would see it when they're walking back from the park. So this was the plan. Tied the dog up, went back inside, resumed the meeting. Hadn't been going for more than another 10 minutes when door goes again. Repeat performance from my little dog. I go and answer the door, and this time standing there is a very disgruntled looking woman holding on to the golden retriever by half a lead. Is this your dog? She says, and she's clearly really unimpressed. No, I say, it's not my dog. This is my dog. I point to my barking dog. No, she says, well, this dog's been running out in the street and the other half of its lead is tied to your gate. Clearly she feels I need to take responsibility for the escaped dog. So I go back outside, I tie the lead in a knot and reset the water bowl because the dog's knocked it over and go back inside, resume the meeting, whereupon... the most piteous howling. It is clear that I'm a criminal who has tied up this dog and the dog is so miserable it cannot be ignored. Honestly, we just completely abandoned the meeting. My friend went off in one direction. I got the grief-stricken dog, took it over the road to my neighbour across the road's house, knocked on her door and said, Sarah, I'm really sorry to ask you this, but do you think you could mind this dog for 2 hours till I get back from the dentist and then I will take it to the Lord Smith dog home, dog's home, because it's been running around and, you know, it clearly needs to be found in some way. And she said, yeah, sure. The boys will love it. She had two little preschoolers at that stage and she took the dog. So I went off to the dentist. Came back 2 hours later and I hadn't been home more than 5 minutes when door goes again. This time when I open the door, it's Sarah, my neighbour, and she's standing there holding the busted dog's lead I've given her. Oh, Sarah, I say, I'm coming. I'm sorry. I truly have only just got home. I'll come and take the dog now. And she says, no, no need. Do you want to know what happened? Of course, I say. Well, she said, the dog was as happy as Larry. As soon as it came inside, sat under the kitchen table while the boys had their lunch. The boys really liked it. They thought it would be a great idea if we made a poster. So we took a photo of the dog and put my phone number and have you lost this dog? And we decided we'd go out walking the streets and postering the telegraph poles. And we hadn't been walking for more than 20 minutes, she said, when this car pulls up, double parks, the driver leaps out, runs over to the dog, throws his arms around his neck, buries his head in its fur. And Sarah says to him, ah, I guess that's your dog. But the man shakes his head. No, he says, it's not my dog. This is my father's dog. He's living with us at the moment because his house got burnt down in the bushfires. And the dog is all he's got left. But I'm not used to having a dog. And I walked out this morning and left the gate open. I thought I'd lost his dog. Oh, thank you so much. Ah, says Sarah, it's the least we could do. And she gives me back my lead. She says, too bad about your lead. Ah, never mind about that, I say. It sounds like the lost dog's home.
That is absolutely fabulous. I like happy endings.
It's true, it's
true. And ones that don't have expected endings.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So that's
let me tell you what I love about that story. I love that it basically it's about those moments, you know, when you're faced with something as just speechlessly hideous as those fires were, where you feel there's just nothing you can do that's going to make any difference. And then there just comes this one random act of kindness that makes a difference for someone. And it's just a lovely reminder that, you know, that's what can happen.
It's so beautiful. And it's such a... I've never seen Joy speechless in the studio. So what a beautiful demonstration of the power of storytelling as well.
Oh, I think you're horrible. Normally we're horrible to you.
It's good to be speechless sometimes.
Yes, I got my two dogs from the Lost Dogs Home. So there you go.
Great.
Gay radio, online, all the time, joy.org.au.
And you're on Spirit Lounge on Joy 94.9, and you're with the priest and the poof, and we're talking with Julie Perrin, who's not a pea person, but she is a storyteller.
Well, I'm a Perrin.
Well, that's true, yes. Now, you have another short story that you want to
share. Look, I just want to tell you about this gorgeous thing that happened at Melbourne Writers Festival a couple of weeks ago. I was on in the schools program with two fabulous humans, one storyteller called Vulunga Khoza, who was born in South Africa and is just the most charismatic storyteller. He's fabulous. And also I met John Harding for the first time. He's an Indigenous playwright, and he was also telling stories. So it was the three of us, and we were getting mic'd up at the, you know, down at Acme, and the sound techs are all totally onto it there, and they had, you know, the headset mics and they were dishing them out, and Vulunga just held up, you know, this sort of pinky beige mic that they were giving us, and he said, "Have you got any of these in brown?" Which was rather gorgeous, but also quite confronting, because I realised at that point in time I had always accepted that we called that colour, that pinky beige colour, we call it flesh. You know, what's with that? Who's flesh? Well...
Yeah, and the majority of people in the world would not be that colour.
Yeah. But I'd never till that moment realised what a complete kind of contradiction it is to call it flesh.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. We have a message from Betty, who says that she loves that dog story.
Oh, good.
And she's hugging her dog as she listens.
Yes.
And she wants you to come back to Spirit Lounge.
Oh, I'd love to. Will you have me?
Well, of course
that's,
we will.
That's an official invitation from one of our listeners. So we can't not invite you back.
Excellent.
So that's our show for the night. Thank you, Julie, for coming in. It's been fabulous, and I absolutely love the stories. And tellingwords.com.au if you want some more information and to see what's on. And we're going to finish with Heidi Pop with It Feels Like Rain. And this is Goodnight from the Priest.
And the Poof.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.